I'm John Kroll. On today's No Limits, we're going to talk about a new database that provides in-depth information about 99 individual Marion County neighborhoods. We'll discuss what this new information reveals about Indianapolis and Central Indiana. My guests are Sharon Kandris, Director of Community Informatics and Savvy Director of the Polis Center at IUPUI, Brad Bobian, Administrator for Long Range Planning, Department of Metropolitan Development, City of Indianapolis, Marion County, and Stephen Meyer, Executive Director, King Park Development Corporation. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today on No Limits about a new Indy Vitals tool from Savvy. We'll talk a little bit about what that is. But it provides in-depth information about 99 individual neighborhoods in Marion County. If you'd like to join the conversation or if you have questions about some of this new information, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Sharon Kandris. She is the Director of Community Informatics and Savvy Director with the Polis Center at IUPUI. Brad Bobian, who is Administrator for Long Range Planning, Department of Metropolitan Development, City of Indianapolis, Marion County, and Stephen Meyer, who is the Executive Director of King Park Development Corporation. Welcome to the program, all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, it's good to have you here. Sharon, I'm going to start with you. Tell me a little bit about what this tool is and how it came about.
Sure. Indy Vitals is a website that's intended to talk about 99 different neighborhood areas, which are groups of neighborhoods, and provide data that gives user access to information about the health and stability of these areas. It's intended to help people quickly see through visuals and the actual data itself how these neighborhood areas have changed over time. If they want to dive deeper and explore some of the trends and how those factors such as built environment, education, employment, socioeconomic factors, how those have changed over time, how a neighborhood compares to other neighborhoods, how it compares to a county, to the metro area, to the state. So, it lets you quickly see how a neighborhood's doing. It lets you look kind of at its story over time and how things are changing. Have they gotten better? Have they gotten worse? It's really intended to provide a lot of information to people about the same geographic area, so everyone kind of understands the perspective from has the same starting point, the same story to tell about that particular community.
And what was the genesis? I mean, where did the motivation to pull all of this information together come from, Brad?
So we just completed a large-scale planning effort called Plan 2020. And Plan 2020 was talking about the type of community we want to leave when our city celebrates its 200th birthday in 2020. And so as part of that process, we realized that even if we checked off the box on everything we wanted to do, would our neighborhoods across the city change? And so to answer that question, we wanted to build a dashboard, a neighborhood-level dashboard that could tell us, did neighborhoods improve? Did neighborhoods of all types across all the city, all the county improve? And so that was really the initial genesis of Indy Vitals.
And I'm going to ask this of Stephen. What parts of the information do you find most useful or revealing?
Well, it really depends on the neighborhood that you're looking at and in the context in which you are looking at the website. So, for instance, if you are interested in housing revitalization, you may look at the data related to housing. If you're interested in education, you may be looking at the information around schools. But the most interesting part about it is that you're able to compare across those different sectors and really get a good idea about what that neighborhood has going for it and what the obstacles that it's facing are.
And I'm going to come back to Sharon on this one. First, how did you identify the 99 neighborhoods? I mean, how did you, Brad's saying that one should go to me. How did you identify the 99 neighborhoods, and why were there 99 as opposed to 98 or 100? How did you draw the boundary line?
So drawing a line on the map is the most political thing you can do. So this is always a big question. There was no magic number behind 99. We were not shooting for 100. We were not shooting for 90. Just basically, there was an initiative during the waning days of the Peterson administration that the deputy mayor at the time was working on to organize city government around city government defined boundaries. At that time, they pulled up historic maps. They looked at major barriers like rivers, interstate systems, things like that. They looked at how neighborhoods self-define themselves. We have this system called a registered community organization system, so we looked at those boundaries. We also looked at excluded city and included town boundaries. And so we kind of resurrected that idea. We zoomed in. We drew the boundaries at the parcel level, so every single parcel in Marion County is assigned to a single neighborhood. They're not split up. We also reconsidered some of the boundaries. We zoomed in, looked at development patterns like lot sizes and where subdivision lines were, things that kind of made sense to be separate or apart. And that's how kind of the geographies came about. They are different than how individual neighborhoods or neighborhood associations might define themselves. We have 99 in our system. If you look at our registered organization system, there's something like 675 different organizations. There's something like 1,500 different land subdivisions. And so we wanted a more manageable number than those numbers. And we also wanted a discrete number, so every parcel was in a single neighborhood. If you look at the registered organization system, for example, there's lots of neighborhoods that overlap. And for data purposes, we wanted to be able to tell a single story through data for that single geography. And so there's lots of ingredients to it. It's not magic. We can, I promise, through this entire radio show and probably the rest of the year, debate where the lines are. That's kind of how they came about.
And Sharon, where did you find the data?
So a lot of the data come from our Savvy Community Information System. That's one of the nation's largest systems that curates data from various, about 30 different local, state, national sources. We have processes that transform those data into meaningful metrics and indicators. Savvy has almost thousands of metrics about communities in central Indiana. We have lots of tools to visualize and analyze that. But what we wanted to do with Indy Vitals was make it very simple, pull those things that are relevant to measuring health and sustainability of neighborhoods, make it easy for people to access those. So we pulled in the data that are specifically relevant to that question into Indy Vitals. We also acquired additional data sets from the city of Indianapolis, and all of it's about presenting that information about a place, being able to look at it over time, historically, and trends. We look to the best sources of data when it's available, something that we can consistently maintain over time, and things that we can update regularly. But mostly it comes from the Savvy Community Information System.
We probably ought to explain to people what Savvy is.
Yes. So Savvy is it's a long acronym that stands for Social Assets and Vulnerabilities Indicators. It is something that's been around for 20 years. It pulls in data from all these different data sources that I mentioned, so census, the police department, health department, Department of Education, to really help us describe place, the socioeconomic factors, the vulnerabilities in those areas, the assets, those community resources, human service providers, those folks that are providing services. The intention is to help people evaluate what needs in a community are, what existing resources they're already in place that can be built upon, and then where those gaps are. So it provides, again, a lot of ways to visualize those data and analyze it. But it does require, a certain level of savviness to be able to go in and manipulate the data. So, we've realized over time that people don't have as much, not everyone has as much time to be able to go in and manipulate that data. So at the same time that Plan 2020 had this vision to, be able to measure impact of neighborhoods, Savvy also had a pushing forward a vision to try to make the data more accessible. So it was kind of these things coming together together at the same time, you know, has resulted in you know, a resource that makes it easy for people to get access to information about neighborhoods and tell very quickly. Go in there, you can look at a dashboard, and you can really tell a great story about a place. I mean, the Indy Vitals gives you, you know, the information to look at not only, you know, how it's doing, but what's improved over time and what can we build on? You know, what resources or what are the positive aspects of that community and how can we build upon those? And, you know, what's still, what opportunities already still exist out there? So there's just a lot of data that's very easily accessible to folks. And, you know, it's, yeah, a lot of easy ways to visualize it.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the new Indy Vitals tool. It's an online database that provides in-depth information about 99 Marion County neighborhoods. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or on Twitter at WFYI. So if I understand this correctly, the real contribution, a lot of this information has been available for quite some time. It is that we're able to gather it together so that you can see it in much, much sharper relief for the first time. Is that the case, Brad?
Yeah, and we added some features like you can now compare from one another. So an example, you might pull up your neighbor and see you have a 15% poverty rate. But for the average person, what does that mean? Is that good? Is that bad? You really don't know until you compare to the rest of the county. You can see that actually that's pretty smack dab in the middle. So that's really maybe not so bad. I mean, clearly any poverty is bad, but comparatively, that may not be as big of an issue as it is for some other neighborhoods. So the comparative function, I think, is incredibly helpful. And then we've also tried to add colors and arrows. So a green arrow means something is getting better. A red arrow down means or something is getting worse. And so there's some easy cues for the average person to come in and just quickly at a glance see how their neighborhood is doing.
And how will this help, and I'll ask this of all three of you, in terms of approaching civic problems, is it more an educational tool or is it going to be something, you know, for those of us who want to know how our neighborhood's being is handling certain things. It certainly provides some information about that. But does it give you a chance to take a look at, you know, I'm trying to think how I want to frame this, at both specific problems and then the more generalized ones facing the Indianapolis? We tend to, when we talk about Indianapolis and its problems, we tend to talk about that collectively and not realize that Indianapolis, like most places, is really a series of small villages.
Yeah, we have incredible diversity. You can farm in Marion County. You can live work in a 52-story office tower. So there's incredible diversity. So this kind of gets at my passion about building this portal, is that by defining kind of neighborhood geographies, we allow ourselves to tell the same story for the same area through data. There's some beauty about people carving up data however they want for their service area, for their neighborhood, whatever. But by forcing people to look at the same story, whether they're inside government, they're a neighborhood activist, they're a nonprofit organization, they're a philanthropic funder, they all see the exact same data, the exact same story, and so they can concentrate their collective efforts to resolving those key challenges, to building on those key opportunities they see. So for me, the idea of collective impact data, using data to steer resources and steer activity to the places that really need it, is my passion in building the program.
And, you know, in terms of this, Sharon, were there gaps in the data? I mean, in the process of assembling this, did you realize that there are things that you still need to gather or find out there?
Yeah, there's always the growing wish list of things, and sometimes we had to just weed it out because there's quality issues or it's not as accessible as we'd hoped. You know, there's always limitations in the data, so when we put stuff out there, we try to always make sure that's clear to the user. You know, one thing that we did want to accomplish through this, though, is to be able to allow people to dig deeper. So in some cases, that meant stepping away from allowing more metrics, but allowing that deeper dive. So what that means, kind of in response to your last question, is that it's not just about, like, what is that statistic for that neighborhood, but are there people of different demographics, of different socioeconomic status that are more impacted than others? So are there disparities and gaps? So the data lets you drill into that as well. So you can see, you know, not only what the poverty rate is, but how does that differ by race or by education level status? And so it really, we tried to go as deep as we could on a fewer set of metrics, but really all kind of focused on the sustainability and health of neighborhoods.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Savvy's new Indy Vitals tool. Provides in-depth information about 99 Marion County neighborhoods. My guests are Sharon Kandris, she is the Director of Community Informatics and Savvy Director of the Polis Center at IUPUI, Brad Bobian, who is Administrator of Long-Range Planning, Department of Metropolitan Development, City of Indianapolis, Marion County, and Stephen Meyer, Executive Director, King Park Development Corporation. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about Indy Vitals. It's a new online tool that provides really deep information about 99 different individual neighborhoods in Marion County. My guests are Sharon Kandris. She's the Director of Community Informatics and the Savvy Director, Polis Center at IUPUI. Brad Bobian, who is Administrator for Long Range Planning, Department of Metropolitan Development, City of Indianapolis, Marion County. And Stephen Meyer, who is the Executive Director of King Park Development Corporation. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. So, Stephen, I'm going to ask here real quickly, in terms of looking at this, what were the surprises that came out? I mean, there are always revelations that come out of getting a lot of information that, even if a lot of it's been previously available, when you are able to set pieces of it next to each other, what were the things that, you know, where the light bulb went on for you?
So during the process of us actually putting together this dashboard and evaluating which data sets we wanted to include and how we wanted to present them, I think the most surprising thing for me was the different ways that people can look at the data and how they interpret it separately. And so we had a lot of really healthy conversations about how we want to present that information and what the underlying judgments that may be made by that information. So we wanted to make sure that that this information was framed as objectively as possible. So that was surprising. As far as the information from my particular neighborhood service area, there are several pieces of information that we weren't expecting. Our service area includes near North Side neighborhoods. There are seven of them, and when we looked at the information as part of a grant writing application, we saw that not only was the property values in the area going up and the median income going up, which were not surprising to us at all, but the poverty rate was also going up, and so it prompted us to do a more thorough investigation into what the data was actually saying to find out what was causing that to happen.
We've gotten a question from a listener via Facebook, and if you'd like to reach out to us via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. This regular listener, Gary, who says, as a person who is in the level 2 savvy category and has seen the new savvy, how does a person disaggregate the data if Savvy cannot prioritize my exploration or research? Sharon, I think I'm going to throw that one your way. I'm guessing the other guys were avoiding eye contact, so that's why I came to you.
Well, if I understand the question, I think what this person might be asking about is how to take the data and kind of break it down from what might be presented there. So on Indy Vitals, we try to provide the data accessible behind what went into those numbers to make them downloadable. You can export all the visualizations and all that. Savvy, I mentioned it has a larger breadth of data. So you can go in and get the more detailed, smaller geographic units available that make up those neighborhoods. So, a neighborhood that we're representing in Indy Vitals, for example, may be made up of 5 sub areas. So you can go in and Savvy and break those down and download that data.
Probably ought to ask, how do people go about and using this tool? Where do they find it? What steps do they have to take?
With Indy Vitals?
Yeah.
It's indyvitals.org. It is designed to be very simple. You go to the homepage. You find a map. You can pan around the map to find your neighborhood area. If you don't know, which of the 99 neighborhoods corresponds to the area you're particularly interested in, there's a little Google search that you can type in an address, a place name, an intersection to find your area. You click one click and you get a dashboard that gives you a lot of information about that particular community. You can start to weave together a story that talks about, how walkable the neighborhood is, what its general demographics are, what the socioeconomics are, what income levels, education status, whether or not there's jobs available in that community, whether or not people are working in the community, what their transportation access is. All that's available from a quick click. And then you can dig even deeper, like I mentioned, if you wanted to kind of explore if there are certain demographics that are more impacted than others. One more click will give you drill down various time trends, maps, bar charts. And we even have a third level for those who really want to go all out and explore our exploratory spatial data analysis tool, which is an advanced option that kind of lets you look at the interplay between different factors. So if you want to say, for example, look at median income and how that relates to health status and or health insurance and vacancy rates and kind of see the interplay of that between different neighborhoods, you can start to really dive deeper and understand the data. So we've got really 3 levels of access. Each are accessible through one click.
How long did it take to build this?
So that's been...
Oh, everyone's looking uncomfortable now and chuckling. So...
I think it's been something in the making for maybe 9 months. I think we had an advisory committee. Stephen was on that. We had other community members that kind of from the beginning we start to develop and define what the requirements, what data needs to be on there. We had a thorough vetting process of what metrics we want to include about neighborhoods, kind of define what what the click operations need to be, what visualizations need to be there. Then our team, which I should mention, is a fantastic team back at the Polis Center. They do a lot of development of data visualizations, especially around visualizing spatial information about places in central Indiana and beyond. So that team then takes those requirements and starts to build out this site. And we have different iterations, kind of beta site that we allow people to kind of play with. But all along the way, we're getting feedback and advice from this advisory committee that's guiding the process. So it was about over the course of 9 months. It was kind of spread out. So we had a lot of time for feedback and development.
Brad, how do you hope people will use this?
Well, I think going back to my, the passion about why we built this was to use data to tell a story and to use data to better coordinate all of the people that are passionate and doing work in neighborhoods. And so whether you're a neighborhood activist, a community development corporation like Stephen is, a public policymaker like me and the city side is, a community funder, you can all see the same story. You can see the same need, and hopefully that means that we all focus on the same issues that are more relevant to the actual needs of the neighborhood.
Or at least are arguing about concepts rather than facts.
Correct.
So that was a large part of it, is to create a common gathering area. What will you consider, I'll reframe this then, what will you consider success out of building this initiative if it reduces the number of arguments about whether poverty is going up or down in a certain area, or or whatever? What constitutes success?
I think when you have a city county that's 403 square miles, and we talked about diversity, there's active commercial farms, there's neighborhoods that are struggling, there's neighborhoods that are thriving, there's a downtown, there's lots of diversity, and every neighborhood has a different need. And so I personally would define success as if all of the players, city government, nonprofits, philanthropic, recognize that we do not have one solution fits all or one fits all solutions across Marion County, that you need to look at the data, you need to look at the individual neighborhood and see what the needs are and devise programs that are relevant to the true needs so that we can improve every single neighborhood across the city.
Stephen, what constitutes success from your perspective? I mean, one of the interesting things is all three of you have this elephant from different points, right, or touching it, so
absolutely.
And trying to identify it.
Absolutely. I agree with Brad that using the data to make more informed decisions about policy decisions that are being made, funding decisions, organizations like mine trying to decide where we put our resources and what effects we think we can reasonably have in a neighborhood versus before we would be forced to make educated guesses and try to pull together data from many different sources. So this really helps us inform our strategic plan going forward, and it also allows us to look back over time and look at data from previous initiatives and see whether they had the intended effect that they were supposed to have, whether there's always kind of mythology that builds around previous programs and how successful or unsuccessful they were. So this lets us look back in time and see what the data actually tells us about those initiatives. So, and again, to inform our decision-making process with and to tell a story not only to our neighbors, to our funders, and to the policymakers.
And Sharon, was success for you just getting the thing built and done?
Yeah, in some ways, yes. But now really, I mean, our mission, the Savvy's mission is to help organizations make data-informed decisions. And so we want to make that data as accessible as possible. So if people are able to use that information, if they're able to access it, if they're able to tell their stories, if they're able to understand the complexities around these issues that we're describing, and use that to start to shape a new story so they can, think about how can we improve this area? How can we, make changes in a positive way? If we've been a part of that and if IndyVitals has helped improve that decision-making process in some way, then, that to me is success.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the new IndyVitals tool. It's an online database that provides really in-depth information about 99 Marion County neighborhoods. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So the other piece of this that I'm hearing too, and Stephen, I'm going to throw this one your way first, is that it is going to focus more attention at the neighborhood level, sort of the countervailing pressure during Indianapolis's growth to being a major city was that a lot of attention was focused on revitalizing the downtown, that became a huge priority, and that the neighborhoods often suffered from either benignly or sometimes not so benignly from lack of attention. Is one of the hopes out of this that you can advocate and neighborhoods can advocate for what they need more effectively?
Absolutely. And this also gives organizations like mine the data that they need to advocate for specific tools out of the toolbox that may be available through the city or other funding sources. So every neighborhood doesn't have the same needs, and so we can look at this data and make an informed argument about certain resources being deployed into certain neighborhoods as opposed to other neighborhoods in the hope that they will be more effectively used.
Do you worry at all that it'll pit one neighborhood against another? I mean, the way you're saying that, it makes sort of sound like the Hunger Games, only at the neighborhood level.
Well, to some extent, there is always that view that either one neighborhood is getting preferential treatment over another. But really, it's about providing that information to the decision makers that justifies the positions that you're taking. If anything, I think it will mitigate those kinds of interactions because the tools now are readily available through IndyVitals to make the strongest argument that you can make that your particular neighborhood or service area needs particular tools or investments.
Brad, how will this change, having all this information gathered together in one place, how will it change the public policy process for, planning for Indianapolis's development? I mean, it sounds like it's going to be, instead of a collective thing, it's going to be much more targeted.
Well, I don't know if I would say it's much more targeted. Over the past few decades, the profession of city planning has become much more democratized. There's lots more people outside of city government doing planning than there are inside city government doing planning. And so looking at that, the professional city planners inside the city county building really need to be focusing more on how we coordinate the full planning capacity that we have out in the community, and less so doing it themselves. And so IndyVitals allows us to share in a much more easily digestible format the data tools that we had been using as professional planners to embrace the people out there, the grassroots organizations, the nonprofits that are doing community neighborhood level planning. So my hope is that this provides much more informed planning processes in our community.
Do you worry about the question I asked Stephen, that it will at some level, the information also can be used? I mean, information is a tool, it also at times is a weapon.
Yeah.
that it will be used to pit one neighborhood against another.
So to answer that, and, you know, even to go back to the downtown question, you know, downtown is a neighborhood too.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually one of our fastest growing neighborhoods in the county. But at the same time, you can't be a downtown of nothing, as Mayor Hogsett has said. So my interpretation of pitting one neighborhood against the other is that every neighborhood has different needs. And IndyVital showcases that what works in one neighborhood, what one neighborhood needs, is different than what another neighborhood needs. And so I think by showcasing that, by highlighting that, making it easy to see for all partners inside and outside of government, we can target what we do to places where it's most relevant to the needs of the neighborhood. And what other people do differently, they can target to those types of neighborhoods.
Could you give me an example of, a different need from neighborhood to neighborhood or a different priority?
So one desire that we hear lots inside of city government is improving a streetscape in a village. So a streetscape are nice trees, benches, public art, things like that. That need might be relevant to some neighborhoods that have a vibrant commercial heart, that have a center, where that could benefit, improve, enhance that opportunity. If you go into neighborhoods where people are struggling to put food on the table, they're struggling with public safety challenges, is a streetscape investment the best thing we can do to improve the lives of residents in that neighborhood? Maybe, maybe not. And this tool allows us to showcase that one neighborhood's needs is not necessarily the same as the other.
What were the revelations that you saw when you saw all of this data pulled together? Because I'm assuming you've been through it pretty...
Well, yeah. I mean, once you get into it and you look at every possible neighborhood area across the county, there are always things that pop up. And as you go through it, we recognize there's some anomalies. Once you start getting low population type neighborhoods like the airport, you start getting some screwy statistics, and that's just a statistical anomaly. Stephen's observation on the near north side that you have rapidly increasing property values and incomes, but you also have rapidly increasing poverty. For me, people hear about the success story of Fountain Square. In our data set, Fountain Square is still the number one poverty neighborhood. 46% of residents are in poverty in Fountain Square, and that blew me away.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about IndyVitals. It's a new online database that provides a lot of information about Marion County and 99 neighborhoods in Marion County. My guests are Sharon Kandris of the Polis Center, Brad Bobian, who is with the Department of Metropolitan Development here in Indianapolis and Marion County, and Stephen Meyer, who is with King Park Development Corporation. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Savvy's new Indie Vitals tool. That's an online database that reveals an awful lot of information about Marion County's 99 neighborhoods. Those neighborhoods were chosen with some care. My guests are Sharon Kandris. She is the director of community informatics and is Savvy's director. She's with the Polis Center at IUPUI. Brad Bobian, who is administrator for long-range planning, the Department of Metropolitan Development for the City of Indianapolis and Marion County. And Stephen Meyer, who is executive director of King Park Development Corporation. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or on Twitter at WFYI. So, Sharon, now that you've been through this once, and an experience always teaches you something, are there lessons learned along the way? Were there ways that maybe this could have been done more easily? Or if you had it to do over again, would you reshape the site in any fashion?
Well, there's always probably better ways to do things. I mean, I think one thing that we've learned over time with developing these kind of sites is the simpler, sometimes the better. You know, we started out with Savvy, for example, you know, trying to be provide, you know, ways to get anything for everyone. And so, you know, these kind of tools like Indie Vitals and some of our other tools that we're going to be coming out with are intended to reach a particular use case for a particular audience. So we're trying to, you know, pull in the information that's relevant to that audience and present it in a way that's, you know, simple to use. So we did, you know, do testing beforehand, but, you know, already, you know, we're learning what other things that people, you know, would like to see the data differently or would like to see different types of data, would like it, you know, downloadable in different formats. So, you know, we're always seeking to improve. That's why we have version 2.0 and version 3.0. You know, as we, you know, develop these tools, we do try to engage our community in the process from the beginning to the end. It's really important for us to make sure we're creating something that's tangible and usable for that audience. So, you know, we try to engage them in that process so that up front we're gathering an understanding. But always, once you put it out there, once people start playing with it, even anytime I'm playing with it, you know, I'm you know, sometimes running back to our analysts saying, hey, could we, you know, kind of, you know, slice this a little bit differently? And so, you know, we're continually changing and growing and, you know, trying to improve the site even now as it's been launched.
Stephen, what does the site and all this gathered information not tell you that you wish it could?
Well, obviously there is a lot going on in all of our neighborhoods, and trying to break it down just to these data sets is not telling the whole story. But this does provide a great framework under which everyone can view different neighborhoods and evaluate neighborhoods amongst each other and see whether their intuitions about where they live match up, or whether the policy decisions that individuals are making are really the right policy decisions for that particular area. So,
you've come back to that point a couple of times here, that it's more the one of the values of having this information all gathered is it might tell us if we took some wrong paths in terms of public policy. Have you identified possible wrong paths there that the data has shown you probably were misguided or mistaken?
Well, Yes, I have. Though I think the more important the more important thing to take away from it is whether or not the data for the next decisions are justifying what policies are being implemented now. So obviously, we didn't have the same information available 20 years ago when certain decisions were being made that are available now. So it's always helpful to look back and see how an area has changed after there have been intentional efforts to revitalize or redevelop it, and see whether the outcomes that came about because of that long-term investment in a particular area really reflect what the policy decision at the time was trying to do, or whether there were some other unintended consequences of those decisions.
Could you give me an example, just one? I'm setting that up because I've got another line of questioning I want to go.
Sure. So, for instance, in our neighborhood, Fall Creek Place neighborhood is one of our neighborhoods, and that was a large revitalization area that really started about 20 years ago. And I think one of the surprises from that particular project was that that it was more successful than anybody anticipated, in that the property values have now gone up dramatically since that project started. And the original intent of that project was to provide an affordable neighborhood for low, moderate, and even higher income folks to live in the near downtown area. And unfortunately, what has happened is that it was so successful that everybody wants to live there, and the property values have continued to go up. And so as we look at the next Fall Creek Place neighborhood, what can we learn from that? Should we have more permanent affordable housing than what was implemented in Fall Creek Place? Are there other policy decisions that can be made in order to help shape what the neighborhood looks like 20, 30, 50 years from now?
And Brad, that's in your role, obviously, you look at these numbers, you arrive at recommendations, but ultimately, you don't create policy. That's the council and the mayor's office responsibility. What evidence, or is there evidence, that the folks who actually do the policy work, make the decisions and what the policy are going to be looking at all of this information now that it has been collected when they make decisions? Because at least part of what I'm hearing Stephen say is that, you know, there are some myths about this that this information might contradict or at least explode.
And I guess I have faith that policymakers, whether they're in the council or the mayor's office, have always looked at data. Now, to Stephen's point, the data has not always been there in the past. As you know, society has developed, we've becoming increasingly data competent. So we have a lot more data sources to pull from, so we're a lot smarter today. And so, again, to judge our past mistakes by today's data availability, I think that's hard to do. But I guess I have faith. My role in our community is to provide the best data I have to the decision makers, whether that's neighborhood association presidents, or that's a city county council member, or that's the mayor's office. And that's really up to them to balance data versus other demands on their policymaking mind.
I'll ask all three of you, how have they responded to the rollout of Indy Vitals? I mean, Sharon, have you gotten a lot of calls from council members or others saying, how do I use this?
No, not from city government. I mean, we have, though, worked with neighborhoods, some folks that would just kind of sat down and start walking through the data with them to see what kind of story it tells and helps them, you know, to think about that from their perspective and how it might be useful. interesting thing, as you start to see that story come together, you have some of those aha moments, and you start to really see that what's going on within a particular community may be, we may be doing poorly in all these three metrics.
If I could interrupt for just a second, because you said something there that intrigues me. When you talked about could you give me an example of one of the aha moments for you when you were, because I'm assuming, the three of you have probably looked at this data more closely than any other three people on the planet. What was one of the aha moments for you?
Well, and I think, we come to the data or start with our preconceived notions. I mean, even, as a resident or a neighborhood organization or a nonprofit, you kind of think, here's what we think we know about this community. A lot of times the emphasis is on, the negatives of a neighborhood or, what's going, what some of the deficits are in a community. But when you start to piece together that with the positive aspects, so one of the neighborhoods we were looking at, for example, in the Maple Shade Fall Creek area, it has really high walkability rates. They have really high access to quality childcare. They have, some access to parks and greenways. So you have to pair that with the other information that, looks at, okay, there really aren't, jobs that match the education levels in this community. So, 2% of the population is actually, or the residents are actually not, only 2% of the residents are actually working in that area. So it really pulls it together very nicely so that you can, kind of weave together those different parts. But sometimes it's the positives that are not necessarily ahas, but the refreshing things that you can kind of draw from.
I've gotten an email question from a listener named Dee, and if you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Dee says, I appreciate the concept of Indy Vitals, but after researching the data listed for my neighborhood, I see some problems. My neighborhood, which is an incorporated town in Indianapolis, is considered to be a separate neighborhood in Midtown Indy and has its own voting district as well as its own 501c community association, is lumped into a larger neighborhood with a considerably different set of demographics. For instance, our violent crime rate is 0, not 11.1, as is the larger neighborhood. Our percentage of people of color is between 10 to 15%, not 36%. Our population median age is about 42, not 27, et cetera. Data is a wonderful tool, but only if it is correct. How much of this is a product of the fact that the problem you alluded to earlier, Brad, of figuring out where you were going to draw those lines?
Yeah, and I would take issue with the word correct. Correct is how you cut the pie. And if you cut the pie, the metaphor I often give is a pizza, a combination pizza. You can cut the pizza so there's no olives on it. So your understanding of that pizza is there's no olives on it. You can also cut the pizza so it's full of olives, and your understanding would be full of olives. And so how you cut the pie really dictates the story. And so, we can argue all day long about how you cut the pie. What I really hope people take away is we've cut the pie in a certain way so that people can look at the way we've cut it and see the same data story.
We've gotten another email from a listener named Liz, and again, our email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Liz says, I worked in former Mayor Peterson's office and was heavily involved in listening to constituents express their concerns about their respective neighborhoods, crumbling sidewalks, illegal dumping, abandoned houses, panhandling, etc. This sounds like a great tool, one that would have been extremely helpful back in the day. Does data from the Mayor's Action Center get included in this tool? And separately, what has been the feedback from Indy residents so far about this new resource?
So data from the Mayor's Action Center and other sources inside of city government, such as, Department of Public Works capital improvement projects, that's another one that people have desired for. Those are things that we would like to consider in future phases. And so, yes, and again, Mayor Peterson can actually take credit for some of this. The genesis of the idea of my neighborhood came from that administration. So that's the answer to that piece, is we would love to incorporate future data sets from inside city government in future phases of Indy Vitals.
Brad, one of the things that you've alluded to that is one of the revelations of seeing all this information, at least that there has long been a perception that Indianapolis is kind of a monolith, that we're, Midwestern white folk of a certain ethnic background and all of that. And the information that this reveals is that There is far more diversity to the city. What are some of the other myths that just about Indianapolis and central Indiana that just collecting this information dispels? I'll start with you, Brad, but I'd like to hear everybody's thoughts on that.
Well, I guess I'll go. I've talked a lot, so I'll go quickly. But I think the idea, when you compare Indianapolis to many of our peer cities, we do appear to be more white. We appear to have higher incomes and all of that. And that is really a pure anomaly because of Unigov. We merge city and county governments together, and so you're comparing really a county to a city in many cases. And so all of the challenges that have faced our peer cities really faced Indianapolis too, but it was kind of disguised because you incorporated the entire county to hide some of that. And so a separate statistic that does not come from Indy Vitals, but Center Township, which would be comparable to some of our peer cities, St. Louis, Cleveland, places like that, has lost more than half of its population since it peaked in the 1950s. And that's abandonment on the scale of Detroit. But that's not the story you hear about Indy, because it's been disguised because we had decay in the center city, but we also had growth in the outer reaches of our city. So that's an example I often give.
Stephen.
Well, I think one of the statistics that Brad mentioned earlier, that the average neighborhood has 15% poverty rate. And so that seems high to many of us, but that's average across the neighborhoods. And so I think there are certainly neighborhoods that have much, much higher levels than that. But across the city, the average being 15% seems shocking to a lot of people when they first see that.
Sharon.
I mean, I think from the perspective of the data, you know, I tend to get into the weeds of looking at the different, you know, neighborhoods and, you know, start to explore some of
that's
those.
That's your training and
yeah.
your job.
So, yeah, right. Yeah. So, you know, it is kind of addicting to get in there and, you know, start digging through it. I think for me, again, it's just those, you know, looking at those neighborhoods that you've come to a preconceived notion either through, you know, through media, through, you know, the stories that you hear, and then starting to really dig into it yourself and see, well, this, you know, it's kind of telling me a little bit different story. You know, the Meadows was a good example to me that, you know, looking at those data, yes, you see that, you know, they may be behind on several of the metrics compared to some of their peers. But the really interesting part of the story is there's a lot of greens on the dashboard because they're improving in a lot of ways. So some of those initiatives that are, you know, underway to, you know, make improvements in those communities are starting to show up. So, you know, there's just a lot of ways you can spin, you know, the stories. But I think, you know, the data, you know, is a good starting point from which you can start to explore and tell that story.
We're getting close on time. Real quickly, if people want to dive in and use this tool themselves, how do they go about it once more?
It's at indyvitals.org, IndyVitals.org.
And it's real quick, just a couple of clicks to you can search and identify your neighborhood. You can do it by zip code or by an address or whatever and identify your neighborhood and get the information and make comparisons, correct?
Right.
Well, I'd like to thank all three of you. I'd like to thank my guests, Sharon Kandrick, who is with the Polis Center at IUPUI, Brad Bobian, who is with the Department of Metropolitan Development here for the city and the county, and Stephen Meyer, who is with King Park Development Corporation. I've learned a lot about the city. I thank you very much for coming in, all of you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Certainly. And I'd like to invite all of our listeners to come back on Thursday when we are going to try to unravel and make some sense of the topsy-turvy political world that Indiana has become. Wish us luck with that. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.